Welcome to episode 225 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Kevin Bain from R&A to discuss data, technology, golf, and the Open.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who overcomes jet lag by jumping on a plane, Sean Callanan.
Thanks again, DJ Joel. Yes, I do overcome jet lag by jumping on a plane. I will be jumping on a plane soon. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to Sports Geek. I haven't actually traveled this week, but this week on the podcast, I'm moving from one Open to another. Last week, I was talking with Gus Bolbonton at the Australian Open, talking tennis. And this week, I'm talking golf and the Open. That's how prestigious it is. It's just the. So talking to Kevin Bain from the R&A. He's the head of data and digital infrastructure. So we talk a lot about tech and rolling out tech at golf courses and his history working in golf and some of the challenges that are they're involved in that. But before I get into that, as always, you can contact me by numerous methods. You can try email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. You can send me a tweet at Sean Callanan, or you can fire up, or you can send it to me in the Sports Geek Nation Slack at Sean Callanan will also get me, or at Sports Geek on most channels. Before I get into my conversation with Kevin Bain, hopefully if you're listening to this, you will be attending the National Sports Forum. I'll be there. I'll be presenting a Digital Dollars workshop. I'm looking forward to catching up with listeners and Sports Geek Nation members in Las Vegas. As always, my offer stands. If you listen to the podcast and you mention that you listen to the podcast and you say, hey, Sean, you owe me a beer, I'm more than happy to buy you one. So if you're going to the National Sports Forum, please reach out, say hello. If you have not yet got a ticket, you can still do so. sportsgeekhq.com/NSF. And if you use the code SportsGeek100, you'll get $100 off your registration. So now I want to introduce my guest, Kevin Bain from the R&A. They are, and I'll get Kevin to do the explaining of what the R&A does, and his role is as head of data and digital infrastructure. We talk a little bit about the role there around the laws of the game and the laws of golf and some of the different customer segments you have to appease, and then also talk about the infrastructure that is required, one, to provide technology to a golf course, and also the strain that a tournament like the Open feels from a digital point of view when the actual tournament is in operation, to go from thousands of visitors to millions of visitors. So this is my conversation with Kevin Bain, Sports Geek Nation member. Remember, you can join him on a special on that special link as a podcast listener, sportsgeeknation.com/connected. Here's my conversation with Kevin Bain. Very happy to have Kevin Bain from the R&A. He is the head of data and digital infrastructure. Welcome to the podcast, Kevin.
Thanks, Sean. Nice to be here.
So first of all, before we get started, give people who might not know what the R&A does and what its role is in the world of golf.
Sure. The R&A governs the rules of golf globally, with the exception of the USA and Mexico. So the USGA, they look after that. But our remit is to govern the game of golf and the rules of golf globally. We also organize the Open Championship, which is one of the four golf majors and the only major to be hosted outside the US.
Yep. And so, yeah, so the R&A comes from the members golf club at St. Andrews, the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. That's where the name comes from.
That's right. Yeah. So the golf club and the company was one and the same up until 2004, and then there was a separation of the R&A group of businesses from the golf club itself.
So as part of R&A, what do you do? What does head of data and digital infrastructure mean?
Essentially, there's three main areas that I'm involved in. So one, which I've been involved in pretty much since day one, is management of our digital channels. So the digital development of websites and apps across the Open, across the RNA, and we also run the World Amateur Golf Ranking, which is about 10,000 players, men and women. And so we manage those channels. I also am involved in all of our data management and CRM projects, which is a relatively new role.
Yep.
And then also providing support to our championship staging team. We install a network, a fiber network at each of the Open venues that we go to.
Okay, so that is a pretty broad role. You mentioned there that RNA was formed effectively in 2004. What did the landscape look like early on when that, you know, digital was just starting to form and some of this infrastructure needed to be put together? What were those early days, and what were your involvement in those early days?
Yeah, I mean, early days, I was on the tools. I came in as a digital media assistant, so essentially responsible for uploading all the content to the various websites. First Open was 2010 at St Andrews, which was pretty interesting. But back then, mobile phones weren't allowed, so you had to check your mobile phone as you went in.
Yep.
Our focus was really on Facebook and Twitter. That was about it.
Yep.
And things like, you know, we had a mobile website, but it was all about desktop. It was all about kind of making a big desktop experience for our fans to consume Open content.
And so, yeah, that's obviously changed in the last couple of years as everything's gone mobile. Can you have your mobile on the course now? Has that changed some of the requirements of what you've got to do for especially around the Open?
It has, absolutely. So now we allow mobile phones, which is great, obviously. And to support that, the Open is held at a number of links courses around the UK, and this year we're going back to the island of Ireland, but they're all links courses. So they're mm-hmm. all played right by the seaside. So the mobile coverage is not what you would expect. So we install a fiber network at each of the venues that allows us to provide public Wi-Fi for all of our fans. So, I mean, the network looks after a number of things. So whether it's point of sale, access control, or, you know, obviously all of the traditional networking services, but a key role in that is making sure that our fans can stay connected whilst they're at the Open.
So I remember talking to the guys at the Kentucky Derby, and you know, I've been at the Melbourne Cup when they've had 100,000 people at Flemington, and some of the the infrastructure you have to roll out to do it. When you're rolling out a network like that over a wide, you know, big expanse of a golf course and links course, what are some of the issues involved for that to make sure? Because the fan appetite of that they want the data and they want it there and then just keeps going up. So, you know, not being able to pull out their phone and use their phone and check their scores and take their photos and post them has obviously grown year on year. What were some of the challenges in rolling that over links courses?
The main one is making sure that the golf course isn't affected.
Yeah,
yep. A golf course hosting the Open obviously looks very different to how it looks year round.
Yep.
So we obviously come there, and there are a number of temporary infrastructures. So whether it's all the grandstands, a media centre, contractors' compound, broadcasters' compound, we've got all these temporary structures that, whilst they're up, you can kind of go, well, we'll put a node box over there, and that grandstand's going to hide it, and we'll mm-hmm. put that over there, and it's going to be hidden. But once all that's stripped away, you know, these links courses are, you can't hide it behind trees and bushes. Yep. There tend to be many of them. So that's the biggest challenge, is making sure that when we go out of town, when the members come back and visitors come back to play the golf courses, that they are unaffected. So we have to work about 2 years out. So we're doing planning now for St George's in 2020 and St Andrews in 2021 to do the installation of the fibre ring goes under the golf course. So if we need to run a stretch of that over a fairway, we need to allow the greenkeepers time for the course to recover. So a lot of planning ahead, and just trying to get a steer on where where the grandstands are going to go, where all the infrastructure is going to go, so that we can make sure that we're feeding not just the network, but the water and the waste and the electricity, all of these areas. And it's quite a skill. I mean, that's something, thankfully, I'm not massively involved in. That's our championship team.
Yep.
But it's quite a skill to go and see an empty golf course and go, well, we're going to have our TV studios there. It's going to be a big grandstand there. So therefore, we need to make sure that the exit points for all the node boxes are identified.
It's definitely down the, I remember a couple of years ago, people saying Wi-Fi, and it's a utility just like toilets and things like that. And the fact that you're, especially in your case, you actually have to go to that planning and making sure that you can get the all the cabling and everything that's needed in there in the same way you have to do for waste. It's because it's not the same as in a stadium where you can just hide it under seats or put it a string along the roof. You physically have to integrate it with the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's something we've been doing. The first public Wi-Fi we had available was at Muirfield in 2013. And since then, it's just grown and grown. The network capacity has grown. The requirements on it have grown. And it's a skill. As I say, it's a skill that the guys in the championships team have. And, it's great to be able to work with them and learn from them and ultimately make sure that it's smaller things, like even if you go, well, we're going to need a camera by that greenside bunker, so we're going to have to run some cabling. But you might have a spectator walkway that's just a couple of feet along. So, you obviously need to make sure there's not a trip hazard, etc. So it takes some planning.
And you've got the requirements, expanding requirements of broadcasters that want more and more capacity, but then they also want the terrific shots where they don't see lots of cables and, so they want everything hidden. They want the magic of it without being able to see any of it when they have the high def shot of the green or the pass across the fairway. They don't want to see any of your tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really, so a couple of years ago, we took the production of the main world feed of the broadcast in-house to allow us to have a bit more control over the pictures. So most of our primary broadcasters will still bring some additional cameras, and they've done some really cool stuff, installing bunker cams and cameras in the bottom of the cup, what have you. But yeah, I mean, it's making sure that a big challenge with Lynx Golf from a golfer perspective is the way the course plays, the undulations, the weather, etc. And a lot of times, if you have the camera up on a tower and it's pointing down, it can flatten the course. So we really need to make sure that people can appreciate just all the bumps and undulations and runs that occur on links courses, which means often shooting from lower down, which brings challenges.
So moving on from the tech, the other part of your role you mentioned is the website. And developing the website for the different properties, and they're different. It's obviously a different customer/fan experience from a website for the R&A, which is officials and rules and standards, and the go-to place compared to the Open, which is what's happening, who's winning. How do you go about tackling the different challenges that the different parts of the business require?
Essentially, I mean, it's all about being requirements-led. So the requirements from our marketing team for the Open.com, it's all about getting the word of the Open, the message of the Open, being able to get the commercial messages out in a nice, non-intrusive way.
Yep.
That's often a lot easier because that's a traditional B2C. So it's kind of selling the event, which is easy to do because it's a fantastic event.
Yep.
The R&A is different because even with the R&A, we have different subsets of users of the site. So we'll have our rules of golf people and there's an entire section on the rules of golf. We'll have people who are interested in sustainability, people who are interested in amateur golf. We run a number of amateur events, so we have live scoring and videos from all of those events. The heritage aspect of it, all the equipment rules, which is more manufacturers. So we've got some B2B users, we've got B2C users, and if we were to come in with our tech head on and say, right, well, this is absolutely what you need, it wouldn't work. So it's making sure that we work in collaboration with all of our colleagues in the various departments and make sure that essentially we deliver what they want for their group. So, the R&A is a challenge in sight. We're about to embark on a complete redevelopment of the RNA website, and that's going to be a massive project. So one we're excited to do. We got a bit of a jump on it. We updated the rules of golf from the 1st of January this year. So we have essentially a microsite within the RNA site that's all about the rules of golf that's been redeveloped, and yep. Now we need to bring the rest of the website up to speed with that.
And, you know, I guess the challenge is with a tournament site like the Open, so the open.com, is that you get that high volume of traffic around the tournament, around the actual game. But then, you know, it you know, for the other 340 days of the year, it's not getting a lot of traffic. How do you manage the, I guess, it is a requirement, I guess, sort of putting back my former geek hat on, of they want to do different things with the tournament, but you've got this short window of when it's going to be tested, you're going to see whether it works, if I've made sense in that question.
Yeah, you have. I mean, we go, so typical week outside of the Open, we'll maybe get 50,000-60,000 unique users on a typical day. On a championship day, so there are four championship days.
Yep.
On a championship day, we'll have something like 2.5 million uniques on the site. So, I mean, the spike is insane. And even, so the Open technically is 8 days, so it's a Sunday to Sunday event. The first four practice, the first four are championship. But even on the Monday, the tee times for the first two rounds get announced. And there's a spike, there's a little bit of interest, but the interest when that first tee shot hits is insane. And really it's about being a bit clever about what we need to do. So I drum it home with everyone that we have to test, we need to do penetration testing, load test, performance test, and we need to test a load of different scenarios. We had an example in 2014. We had a really, really bad weather forecast planned for the Saturday of the Open.
Yep.
And all of our testing is, we're thinking of, okay, maybe there's a flooding and a par three becomes a par four, or one of the holes is out of action and we need to come back to that. What we never had planned for, because it never happened in the nearly 150 years of the Open, is a 2-tee start. 2-tee start is really quite common at pretty much every other golf event. We don't do 2-tee starts. We found out on the Friday night that the Saturday was going to be a 2-tee start. So that was literally, an all-nighter, making sure that the logic would work. So we kind of, I wouldn't say we got blasé, but after that, we were like, let's think of anything that could happen. Even if it's a highly improbable scenario, we have to plan for it because there's a possibility it could happen. And that really comes down to our testing starts in March, April time, and it just runs throughout. I mean, we get to the point where we're running, whether it's live or streaming tests for the live streams or scoring tests, we're doing playoff scenarios with, I think at one point we had up to 40 golfers in a playoff, just to make sure that all of these improbable scenarios are tested for and work.
Yep.
Whilst at the same time, making sure that if we've got, a few hundred thousand concurrent users on the site, that the performance of the site isn't affected.
And how much, and do you have an app as well around the Open?
We do, yeah. So we've got the Open app. That's always had very much an event focus. So that has been built very much for the event and event goers. We're looking to redevelop that potentially this year as well. And a couple of years ago, we launched a membership program called the One Club.
Okay.
And we're now looking to make the app to give us more of a year-round engagement, to allow us to talk to our fans year-round.
And so then that weaves into your newly found role in the CRM space. So it sort of goes full circle, and the membership and the app, and it starts that conversation with people rather than just being a content-serving piece. You can start that personalization piece.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, up until very recently, it was very much a broadcast channel. Everything we were doing was just getting out to the largest, widest group. We've done a load of work in the background. We've got a data warehouse where we put in all of our ticket, historic and upcoming ticket sales, hospitality sales, retail. With the Wi-Fi network at the Open, we have a sign up on there. So we're basically, any data capture point is now coming into a centralized data warehouse, which allows us to do more segmentation and personalization of messages. I would say it's still early stages. We're looking to, on the website, we're looking to dip a bit of a toe in the water on some of the personalization aspects. But it's you know, back to the previous question, it's finding a balance between, right, let's do something on personalization, but balancing that out with, we need to make sure that this doesn't cause any negative impact on the site.
Yeah. Yeah, but the way you've described it and the way it's sort of coming together, it is a nice transition from we build a website that everyone can see, and now we've got an app that's, you know, event goer based, started to have that CRM, you know, everyone's on that CRM journey, but now you can start doing things like tracking of fans that are consuming data, attending the event, buying things through the app, and it starts becoming that loyalty program to start understanding more and more about what your fans are doing. And then it obviously then opens it up because it's a digital product, and you can look at global opportunities to connect with golf fans around the tournament every year.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. I mean, with us being an event, we don't want to annoy people. Yeah. Outside of the Open, you know, we don't want people to go, I don't want to hear from the Open. It's January. What have they got to say to me? So it's finding the points throughout the year where we can be relevant. So we're lucky enough in that we work with all of the major tours around the world to run an Open qualifying series.
Okay.
So it usually starts with the Australian Open, and there'll be three or four spots from some of these events, either on the PGA, European Tour, Australian Tour, whatever, that will have qualifying spots into the Open. So that allows us to grow from being relevant for 4 days or a week, mm-hmm. to having these different touch points throughout the year. But what's also really good with that is that it allows us to talk to Open fans in Australia. You know, we can be relevant in November, I think it's December this year, for the Open for fans in Australia, and we can start to understand their habits or behaviours. We do get some fans obviously coming from Australia, but the vast majority will be watching at a really awkward time of day for them. And yep. it's making sure that we're able to deliver the right content to them. I mean, we're not doing anything unique, and then it's right message, right place, right platform.
Yep.
But it's trying to work out, other than the Open, when are the points where we can talk to people and engage with our fans without intruding.
So with your role, so the digital content and the contents get developed and the content team effectively, are they in your role, or are they, or is that another department?
No, that's another department. So I work in our technology team, reporting into the CTO. We've got a sales and marketing team, and all the marketing content is done from the commercial department. But I mean, that's something that we've upscaled quite significantly in the last couple of years. So we've now got, you know, a couple of really good guys who just know content, love content.
Yep.
I mean, absolute golf nuts, but also know what platforms work, what message work. And they've been doing some fantastic work over the last few months.
And so your team is working in the back end on the CMS and making sure the website's up and making sure whatever content they produce is looking the best it can be in the app or on the site.
Yeah, exactly. And it's back to that earlier point about requirements. It's understanding from them, what's your content plan? What's your content strategy? What channel? You know, what do you want to use the website for? What do you want to use the app for? What content do we need to be able to surface on those channels that's really easy for you as well? Because year round, it's obviously not quite as high pressure, but when you get to the week of the Open, we've got so many updates going out. There's scoring updates, there's videos, there's news articles, there's photos, there's audio podcasts, etc. And it's making sure that they can fire out those pieces of content without it taking a huge amount of time, without there being any pain points. So it's that was an area that I used to be involved in back at the start. So I kind of understand them on the tools. It's obviously progressed a huge amount since then. But that pressure of being in the event room at the Open and just knowing that you've got, you know, millions of people consuming that content, you need to get it out right, but it also needs to be able to keep it churning as you go.
And you know, golf rights and TV rights and broadcast rights are obviously changing. Are there any Are there any rights from a digital or a streaming point of view that you have access to, or are they all locked up?
No, we're lucky enough to have carved out some pretty good rights. We yep. have two channels, two live channels. So we have a three-hole channel, which is three consecutive holes, and yep. we also have a featured group. So morning and afternoon, there'll be a featured group following the golfers on all 18. We also have a radio channel, which has got crazy high consumption in the US yep. in particular. And then wherever we don't have a broadcast agreement, because we produce that world feed, we can also stream the world feed direct into those territories.
Okay.
So over the last couple of years...
Any particular platform that you've been doing that on?
We do that on our digital channel. So, yep. so the carve-out states that it has to be on our own channel, so the website and the app.
Okay.
And then what we do on site is we know that fans on site, they want to consume the open video content as well. So we have a local multicast stream that, yep. that serves the app users. So they're able to consume all that content on site via the Wi-Fi as well.
Well, there. That's. I think that's where the That's where I think the broadcast deals are changing, because you get your local broadcasters and the major broadcasters getting the major regions. But one, if you can carve off like specific parts of the course, like you've done on particular holes or those kind of things, because the fans now do want those different points of view and that second screening experience. They could be watching the television coverage, but also be following something else that you're providing.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't think I'm not sure anyone's quite cracked the second screen challenge experience. It's one that is easy to talk about, and we could just go, well, that's it. We're providing a couple of channels, and people can consume that as well as a main broadcast. But it's, I think there's a long way to go with that. We've got a huge amount of data collection from the scores. So whether yep. it's all about fairways hit or number of putts, etc. And I think there's something to be said for trying to combine the video content and the stats content. I think that's where I think there would be a real opportunity to just broadcast something new and different and almost being, rather than just supplementing the main broadcast with some more video or a static stat center, something that just gives fans a real feel for why is somebody playing particularly well. Is it driving? Is it putting?
And that's, and that's a little bit, and I think there's that sort of similar stuff. I spoke to Gus Belbonten last week at the Australian Open in some of the Game Insight group. They put some smart people at looking at all the different stats and tried to present stats in a different manner. Some of that went to broadcast, some of it went to social, but it was trying to look at tennis and the stats that normally get presented in a different manner. And I think that's where there's still a lot of opportunity and a lot of upside in a lot of sports. We've seen a big advancement in the advanced metrics and stuff in baseball and basketball in the US. I still think there's a lot of statistics that have been around for a long time, and I think we get the right smart people involved, and how you can integrate it with your broadcast or what you're pushing out from a digital point of view. I think there's definitely an opportunity there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. How you solve it is. There are people far more intelligent than I who can helpfully solve that one. But it's a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I think one of the one is the high performance, heart rate. What's the athlete doing at this point? Is that causing them to play well or not play well? Are they on tilt? That kind of thing. As facial recognition and different tech gets in. I think we'll see more and more of that being integrated into broadcast in some way.
Yeah, I think we will. And I think one of the things for golf in particular is, in particular the Open, you always talk about the luck of the draw.
Yep.
And really, we haven't done enough of the weather impact.
Yep.
So you might get somebody that goes out in the morning on the Monday and the morning of the Thursday, afternoon on the Friday, and the weather conditions are perfect.
Yep.
Equally, you'll get somebody that goes out in the reverse and the weather conditions are brutal. And
yep.
there's always a story there. And, one thing we're doing is working with our scoring partner every single shot that's been hit, we're recording the weather conditions so that we can then try and just tell a little bit more about, rather than just saying the luck of the weather and the draw, it's being able to say, well, you know, the wind changed from X to Y and whatever else.
Or being able to go back and say this, you know, this player plays better, you know, plays well, or you know, hits it longer in windy conditions, or plays better in the rain, and those kind of things, to be able to dive in and start get, you know, as more of that data gets captured, and you can, and then overlay it with the other data that's captured, you can start get that getting those ratings. I know I've spoken to the Weather Channel about doing that in a few different sports around all the data they've got, and I said, well, what if you merged it with the stats that are there and see what data comes out? There might be, you know, it might be that McIlroy plays better when there is a little bit more wind or a little bit more rain, and you know that enhances the broadcast, but just gives the fans a bit more knowledge.
Yeah, that's it. And I think the other thing is the number of different groups of fans are watching this. So you'll get some people who are mad avid golfers,
yep,
and they'll understand it. But you'll also get some people who maybe just they watch some of the majors, or they'll maybe catch this Sunday afternoon the broadcast, and it's kind of, I guess, getting the message across to each of those different user groups. Well, yeah, it's kind of creating it bespoke for them and allowing them, you know, back to the second screen, it's allowing them to go, ah, right, okay, so he, that's why he's doing that, because he's, you know, he's keeping it low. There's, and when Tiger Woods won the Open once, you know, didn't hit a driver, kept it low, just bounced it along, and that was just good course management. But unless you're telling people that story, it's often not easy from just looking at a scorecard to understand how they're playing the course and why they're playing that way.
Yeah, so after this podcast, I've got some people I want to introduce you to that will talk about some of these things, which I can't unfortunately talk about on the podcast yet. But there's there's a spoiler, a teaser for everyone who's listening. You'll find out about this kind of stuff later. I want to ask you, when you're looking at, you know, redeveloping the site and those kind of things, where do you look for inspiration, whether it be design or tech, and like, you know, customer experience, those kind of things? Where do you look for to say, oh, I want to, you know, one of the phrases I use is steal with pride. Like, where do you find pieces of tech or layouts or website design, whether it be in sport or outside of sport? Where do you look for what you would say is best practice?
It's a question I've been asked a few times. I can never really give one answer. I mean, a lot of it really depends on what's happening. So when we were looking to redevelop the open.com, we looked at, because we knew we wanted membership to be a big part of it, we were looking at a lot of football clubs, a lot of rugby teams, and just kind of having a look at sports generally for the membership aspect of it. I think when it comes to tickets and hospitality sales, you know, it's your Amazons. It's, you know, we're not hoping to, or we're not going to replicate what Amazon do, but that kind of, the personalization, the recommendations of knowing who the fans are and getting the right product in front of them. So we'll steal from anyone and we'll be proud of it, but it really is. I mean, it's happening so quickly and there's so much changing that it's really difficult to kind of point to one or two websites that are doing it well. There's so many folk doing it, but there's, I guess, a lot of the football clubs. So you look at the Southampton website, which I really like. It's easier for football clubs, and they might have 40 matches in a season, where we've got 4 days. So a lot of what they do is they can have it fast paced. They can have a lot of content. It can be player focused because they've got access to those players. Where with us, it's more of an event. Everything, or a lot of what we do with the players, is a bit of an ask. So we need to be a little bit clever in what content we create and how we get the content out there. But yeah, I mean, football, especially the English Premier League teams, there's a lot of them. There are various snippets from each that we look at.
They do set the bar really high. I mean, the piece that I find with major events, and, you know, just gone through the Australian Open and, you know, a Grand Prix or big golf event, is that there's so much, again, going back to the crimes, there's so many things that have to get packed in to satisfy everybody. And I always look at the challenge of how do you simplify that enough so everyone who needs to find what they need finds it. And on a mobile, like, you know, I know when I'm looking at websites, and you're probably the same, you know, you're looking them on your desktop, but 70 to, you know, in some cases 90% of the fans are going to be only looking at the mobile. So it can look terrific on the desktop, but it's like, what's it look like on the mobile? So yeah, I'm always looking at different, you know, what different teams are doing and but also events, but then, you know, music festivals, I think, sort of fit in the same major event space. What are they doing in the space? And, you know, it can provide, again, whether it's just a snippet or one little takeaway that you can say, yeah, that's how we want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got an interesting quirk in the traffic patterns on the Thursday and Friday is desktop dominated, or yep. desktop or tablet. And folk are at work. You know, they're falling at work. Saturday and Sunday, they're on the move. They're consuming either on the app or on the mobile site. So absolutely, we need to make sure that the experience is as good, if not better, on mobile than it is on desktop. And it's having that mobile first approach. Again, something that's easy to talk about, but difficult to deliver. But if our agency deliver us desktop first designs, we'll tell them to go back. No, we need to see mobile first, because otherwise you are just kind of going, well, how can we scale everything down rather than how can we make full use of the screen?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much. I want to go into the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do, yeah. I'm a big Aberdeen fan. So the first sports event was, I guess, one of our great rivals. It was an Aberdeen Rangers game back in the early 90s. We won 1-0, I think. It was just, I played football and rugby growing up, but, you know, going to that first match is, yeah. I mean, Pittodrie, our stadium, is not one of the most... it's not a great stadium, but it's just, it's one of those old school stadiums that it's just got a certain charm and appeal, or certainly I think so. I know away fans don't particularly enjoy it, but yeah, that was a great experience.
Terrific. Well, you would have consumed a fair bit of the different food options available at a golf course. Do you have a favorite or a go-to food at a sports event?
Yeah, again, back to football, my first love, can't be pie and Bovril. You know, the halftime pie and Bovril warms you up. It's awesome. Mince pie is my usual go-to, but there's the best away pie is at Kilmarnock Football Club, called the Killie Pie. It's a steak pie, and that with a cup of Bovril is just incredible. If you're ever in Scotland, I'll take you to a Kilmarnock game and we'll try it out.
I'll put it on the list. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Either Twitter or emails, quite boring that way. Twitter, it's just great to kind of keep track on what's happening, whether it's sports, whether it's breaking news. Lately, frustratingly, it's all been about Brexit and the whole shambles around that, but we won't go into that. I love Twitter.
Yep. And is there someone that you follow, read, look up to that you think the Sports Geek podcast listeners should follow, and why?
There's a guy called Lewis Wiltshire who was head of sports at Twitter for a long time. So yep. I've been lucky enough to work with Lewis in his new role at Seven League. Great value on Twitter. Obviously, what the European Tour guys are doing as well, the content that they're churning out is fantastic. So yeah, across those two, I think they're just brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, Lewis is a good guy. And you might have spoiled it already, but what social media platform is your MVP? And you might want to answer for yourself, and then maybe answer for the Open.
Yeah, I should say mine is Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it just can't be beaten. I'm not particularly active on it. It's more kind of used for keeping up with what's happening in the industry. I use Instagram a lot. Personally, I love Instagram, kind of a budding amateur photographer, so I'll use that. And I think Instagram as well for the Open has really allowed us to get a lot closer to the younger demographic. I know that the content guys, they've been using a lot of Instagram stories. We've got some influencers in, and we've been seeing some really good return on Instagram.
And Instagram is actually, of all the platforms, it's the least annoying platform, like talking a bit more about seeing, you know, seeing posts out of tournament. You're not that far, you wouldn't be that fast seeing a, you know, a post from the Open, you know, out of, you know, when it's not the tournament on, like, because it's, you know, it's a nice to look at, you know, you're interested in golf, you still want to see it. It's not, it doesn't sort of, it's not as jarring as other platforms.
Yeah, agree. I mean, we're lucky enough to have video footage back to 1914, I think it is. So whether it's a throwback Thursday
or throwback Thursdays for days.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And Trickshot Tuesday as well. So yeah, it just allows us to connect with golf fans in, as you say, in a non-obtrusive way. But it's, yeah, it's a fantastic platform.
So where can people, if they do want to connect with you, where can they connect with you on the internet? What's the best? What are the best channels?
I mean, LinkedIn's an obvious one. I'm on there. Yeah, Twitter, my handle's at Kev Bain. And then Instagram, I do have a bit of an obsession with cloud photos. So if people like cloud photos, I'm at the Hooli on Instagram.
At the Hooli?
At the Hooli, yeah. There's a story to that. But it's, yeah, H-O-O-L-E-Y.
Is it a story fit for podcasts?
Probably not, but it's probably a story fit for a beer, over a beer sometime.
Okay. So, yeah, so people can send you a tweet, Kev Bain, or hit you up, ping you in the Sports Geek Nation Slack.
That's right.
If you've got a question, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and I look to take you up on that pie in Scotland someday.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's been great. And yeah, do let me know when you're in Kilmarnock, and yeah, we'll meet up.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Kevin Bain at Kev Bain, B-A-I-N. Send him a tweet, or as I said earlier, send him a message on Slack. And keep an eye on theopen.com in July and see what the site looks like during a tournament and some of the offerings that Kevin spoke about in the podcast. And if you are interested in that early tease on video tech that I discussed, please reach out. I can't actually talk about it right now, but some really exciting things happening behind the scenes. But if you're a rights holder looking to provide some value additions to your mobile video coverage, let me know. I'm happy to connect you, as I did with Kevin in Sports Geek Nation, just an easy little group DM to make that introduction. If you're not part of the Sports Geek Nation community, it's currently closed to the general public, but you're not the general public. You're the Sports Geek podcast listener, so you can get access by going to sportsgeeknation.com/connected. As I said earlier, Digital to Dollars will be live at National Sports Forum. If you are looking for a way to drive more revenue from your digital, that is what Digital to Dollars is built for. It is built around the five pillars. The first three pillars are the ones that we really focus on early on at Sports Geek, primarily around knowing your content and helping teams understand what content they're developing and visualizing what it is and developing a pitch of why they should do that type of content. And then I think the second phase, at least early on, was starting to understand the audience. How are the audience interacting with that content? So those two pillars are really key. Knowing your audience, diving into your data, understanding the different types of fans that are interacting with you on all the digital platforms and what type of content works for them. And then the third piece of the puzzle is know your distribution. What platforms work? What platforms get engagement? What platforms get views? What platforms can get traffic? What platforms have the right ad product to be able to deliver traffic or engagement? So those first three pillars of know your audience, know your content, know your distribution are really built for your digital team to help understand how they can really kick some goals from a digital point of view. Now what we've been focused on the last couple of years at least is helping the commercial side of the business understand what digital has been doing. And the audience content distribution part is super important, helping them understand what the trends are, why certain platforms are more valuable than other platforms at this moment in time, and why it's changed over the last 2 years. So it starts coming into knowing your value, understanding what your rate card will look like, understanding the stories behind your rate card, why you're going to put values on certain things, so you can start building out what a digital proposal and digital pitch will look like, which is that last piece, know your pitch. How can you take digital content, branded content, sponsored content, and add it with campaigns and the activations you're doing around stadium and through your events? So it works. The first three parts work if you just want to straighten out your digital strategy and you want to give your content team some direction for the year. You can go through the parts where it's audience, content, and distribution. But if you're really looking to lift the value that you're driving, you really need to have a solid and robust rate card and a solid and robust story and stats behind it. And so you can start developing those pitches. So if you are interested, go to digitaltodollars.com or reach out to me, Sean, at sportsgeekhq.com. Primarily, we're running the workshops, as we are at NSF, in conjunction with a conference. Or doing it for a specific team or league. We ran a league version for the AFL last year. We are getting some interest about running public workshops and taking it on the road and allowing individual teams and leagues to turn up to that. If you're interested in any of those versions, please let me know, especially the public offering one. I might be looking to open some of those up and doing a few trips to offer that if there is interest. I guess the last thing from what we've been up to is been a lot of esports. Obviously, with a team now in League of Legends taking place in the OPL, we're now a couple of weeks in. You can check them out at gravitas.gg, GG meaning good game in the esports space. Yeah, progressing well. We've won a few, we've lost a few, which is what sport is all about. But as a byproduct of getting into esports, we've set up a new business around the esports ecosystem, SG Esports, and it is built primarily to help sports teams and sponsors and brands understand and enter the esports space. So there'll be consulting options for tech providers, teams want to understand what we've learnt being in the esports space, and then also how we can adapt what sports are currently doing well into esports. So Gravitas is a part of SG Esports, and it is effectively my test tube for testing my theories and strategies and the technologies that are being applied in sports and how they can be applied in esports. So if you're interested in that space, please get in touch with me. Yeah, really looking forward to bringing the best practice from the world of sport and the world of business into esports and helping them understand the esports fan, gamers, and also how you can best connect with them and what are the opportunities for sports. We've seen a lot of pro sports get into esports, you know, why you should do it and what it may offer to you and your sponsors. So keep a listen for the end of the game. If you want to understand what an esports event sounds like, the sounds of the game this week come from the Fortnite esports event at the Australian Open that was held on the last day of the Australian Open. I think there was about 4,000 or 5,000, maybe a little bit more, there to watch a professional Fortnite event with $500,000 in offer, thanks to Tennis Australia. So it was really interesting to see that as an event. So listen to the sounds of the game. If you want to see a photo of that, you can go to my LinkedIn. There's a photo of the event. Amazing stuff by the guys at ESL. 30 hours to bump in to get 100 PCs set up and all the screens and all the stages set up, and then 45 minutes to tear it down to get ready for the men's final. So terrific job by the team at Tennis Australia, and thanks to Alfonso for providing me some tickets to go to the tennis. Always good to take part in a major event in my hometown. So, yeah, if you're interested in esports and want to know more and, I guess, pick my brain around what I'm learning in the esports space and what the opportunities are there for the sports industry, but then also the technology providers that are providing services into sports now, how can they tweak their offer for esports? I'm more than interested to talk to you how to do it and partner up and help you provide you an entry into the esports space. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan. Thank you very much to Kevin Bain from the RNA for being my guest on this week's episode. As always, you can get in touch with me, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com or at Sean Callanan on most platforms. Until next week, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.